From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. One of the most consequential annual decisions made by active and retired postal employees is to which plan they will enroll. We are now in the midst of the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program annual open season. That's FEHBP for short. And this open season is a period during which the 8.2 million Federal Employees Health Benefit Program participants may change their health plans. Obviously, a change can impact an enrollee's health coverage and/or the premium he or she pays for that coverage. EAS-level postal employees pay the same portion of total premium as federal employees and retirees, which amounts to about 72% of the weighted average premium of all plans. Today, we brought in an expert on FEHBP. So this week, we have as our guest for the second year in a row, Jay Fritz, the Office of Personnel Management's Program Manager for Outreach and Program Services. Jay, welcome back to Naps Chat. It's been a long year.
It has. It's been a long year in more ways than one. And of course, Bob, glad to be back with the chat and provide as much information as we can for our friends in the U.S. Postal Service.
Now, Jay began his career at OPM in 1991, and he's been involved in the FEHBP ever since. Jay has negotiated FEHBP contracts with insurers and worked with enrollees, agencies, and participating plans themselves on a variety of FEHBP issues. But Jay, before we start talking about the open season per se, I'd like to ask you, how has OPM fared during the COVID-19 crisis, and how has it impacted FEHBP operations?
I think it's impacted the operations, primarily impacting us as employees, is that I haven't been at OPM in the Theodore Roosevelt Federal Building since March 12th. So I think we've done a good job pretty much getting through a negotiation cycle through a preparation for these with everyone working remotely. I think a couple of things that we're now seeing with COVID-19 as it impacts open season and the ability for employees to get information is the lack of the in-person health fairs that we know a lot of the agencies, I'm sure postal facilities have had, where individuals could come in and meet with their HR staff and also with the various plans. And we kind of lost ours at OPM because we always had one ourselves, but we're kind of looking at this as an opportunity because, we knew there are certain areas that just aren't large enough to have a in-person health fair, like postal facilities or individual post offices throughout the country. So I think one thing COVID has really kind of gotten us to do is kind of think out the box of what we can do in more of a virtual world and what can we do for virtual health fairs and how we can account for those and provide better information for people that previously got it in person and now previously people that were really never able to get it at all because they didn't have the luxury of working at a headquarters federal agency or a large postal facility that could have an in-person health fair. So we're kind of seeing this as some opportunities to kind of improve our outreach and the information we provide. So, we're doing our post-mortem already on open season, getting ready for next year's open season. But one of the things we're really looking at is what can we do to do a better job providing information to everyone regarding open season.
Well, let's talk about this year's open season. And I'm sure everyone is wondering, what's new this year?
For FEHB, always new. There's always changes in the plans. We do have some new plans coming on board for the FEHB program. And we always advise people that, generally each year there are some plans that drop out. So we do want to make sure people pay attention to information they get either from the Postal Service, HR, or from the individual plans concerning any plans that may have dropped out of the program entirely or any may that have dropped an option or a service area. So we always, give people kind of that heads up to make sure that your plan is still going to participate in the next year And we did add some new options throughout the country, primarily in our health maintenance organizations. We've added some new options in various plans: United Healthcare, Kaiser, Geisinger in Pennsylvania, Dean Health Plan in Wisconsin, and Group Health Cooperative in South Central Wisconsin have added new options. So that's another choice for individuals to consider. And overall, we're a little bit down on our health plan choices for 2021. There's 276 plan choices in FEHB. There were 279 last year. 18 of these are fee-for-service plan choices open to all, which is the same as last year. And we also have 254 health maintenance organization plan choices, which is down, I think, 3 from last year. So these choices include 18 high-deductible health plans, which we encourage people to take a look at, and also 28 consumer-driven health plan options. So that's kind of what's new. I don't think we had a large number of plans terminate this year. I don't believe they had a large number of drop options or service areas, but there's always something going on in FEHB, and that's why we try to give everyone, you know, the information and kind of give them the heads up that in all most possibilities, you don't have to redo anything in this open season, but you should probably take a look.
Amongst the nationwide plans, there aren't really any major changes other than maybe some consumer-driven options?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think we had any real major. I think like it was last year, the year before, we added the indemnity benefit plan back. But I don't believe the nationwide plans are having much changes regarding options this year.
One of the points of consideration for most FEHB participants during the open season is that they shop for premiums. So I'd like to just talk a little bit about premiums. On the average, FEHB premiums increased since last year. However, they did not increase by the same magnitude as private sector health plans have. Could you talk about the increase and how OPM has been able to contain the premium inflation that has characterized as private sector plans?
Yeah, the overall premium increase for 2021 is about 3.6%. And that, of course, it varies by plan. Everyone needs to keep in mind that's an average across the program enrolling 4 million people. So each individual plan is going to be a little bit different. And some plans could have higher increases than that, and some may have lower increases. So we always encourage people, you know, take a look at their premium. We can throw out an average, but you know how an average is. That's not going to impact everybody the same. How we keep premiums low is I tend to think OPM does a pretty good job on negotiations with our individual carriers. We are, you know, the largest employer-sponsored health insurance program in the world, so I think we have some clout with that. And there's also competitive pressures. One of the things about FEHB is its choice, in that you can enroll in various plans, fee-for-service, HMO, consumer-driven, high-deductible. And we think some of this competition among these carriers have them be a little bit, you know, more in control, a little bit tighter on their premium increases because they don't want to be in a position where they lose their competitiveness with other plans in the FEHB program.
As we talk about premiums, I'm curious, has the pandemic impacted premiums in any way, shape, or form?
They have not. All that is taken into consideration regarding the premiums. I know a lot of services have been delayed because of the COVID. I think they're starting to open some of those back up. But, you know, we have an office of actuaries back at OPM that's taken all these considerations in mind and determining that a lot of it's going to be a lot of these services, they weren't canceled, they were delayed. So I think as more things open up, some of these services delayed early in the year are now happening, you know, toward the end of the year.
Now, one of the former, back when I worked on Capitol Hill, there was a woman named Jean Barber, who was an associate director of Office of Personnel Management a long time ago, and she used to refer to the plan options as choosing between different flavors of vanilla when you sort of select, particularly fee-for-service plans. So my question, Jay, is when you, if you're in open season and you want to decide amongst the different options that are out there, how do you make the determination? It's so confusing.
It is. And you need to keep in mind, I'm also enrolled in FEHB. So I have the same issues that other enrollees do in trying to figure out what's the best plan and option for myself and my wife. So I'm in the same situation as a lot of your listeners are. One thing I do want to promote early on is all the information on FDHP. It's available on the OPM website, and that's www.opm.gov/open season. We always emphasize people to go to the Open Season website. That has all kinds of information on it regarding premiums, quality measures, how to enroll. We have various fast facts on Open Season that provide information on what I need to do during Open Season, what happens if I do nothing during Open Season. But one of the things we really promote more than anything else is our FDHP plan comparison tool. And you can link to that from the website I just gave, the opm.gov/open season. And it's a very good tool. We spent a lot of effort on the tool. We've really enhanced the tool this year to try to make it more user-friendly and more informative. But it allows you to put in your zip code and other various information, and it shows what plans you're eligible for. And it'll show the premiums. It'll show the different benefits that they provide. And you can actually do a comparison of the various plans that you're eligible for to try to decide which one, you know, covers the services that you're looking for at the premium that you're looking for, too. So we always, always promote our FDHP plan comparison tool.
Most federal and postal annuitants presently participate in Medicare. And Medicare Part A, if, for those of us who are knowledgeable in Medicare or who study the program, Medicare Part A primarily is for hospital-related costs, and it's fully paid for by participants during their work years. There's a 1.45% payroll withholding that sort of reflects the premium that you pay. And Part B is optional, and that covers other medical-related costs, including doctor visits. Could you talk a little bit about how FEHBP and Medicare coordinate their benefits?
Sure. The first question people have is that it's kind of a give-me-take Part A. You pretty much are paid for that. It's free in most cases. The question is, as you point out, it's really Medicare Part B. And OPM, there's no requirement to enroll in Medicare Part B, but we do encourage people to take a look at Medicare Part B. In a lot of cases, it does make sense to enroll Medicare Part B because it gives you a little bit of freedom if you would need to go outside of the network of your FEHB plan, and it provides more coverage for various things that FEHB might not cover, or it provides coordination. General rule is if you are employed and have Medicare, FEHB primary, Medicare secondary. If you're retired, Medicare primary, FEHB secondary. We do encourage people to take a look, and we are also encouraging plans to offer incentives for individuals to take Medicare Part B. And some of the things the plans offer, they may waive either their co-payments or co-insurance or some deductibles. And some plans actually offer a Medicare Part B premium reimbursement. And kind of refer back to the plan comparison tool, is that the plan comparison tool makes this information more readily available to enrollees and identifies the plan choices with Medicare Part B incentives. So we, you know, accounted for this, you know, to try to encourage people to take Medicare Part B by negotiations with the carriers, and then we're trying to do a better job promoting that information. So individuals trying to consider Medicare Part B, you might want to take a look at the plan comparison tool and see what the possible benefits of enrolling Medicare Part B are when enrolled in your FEHB plan.
A lot of people ask me this question. What's the difference between a Medigap policy that you might get in the open market, like AARP offers it or Blue Cross Advantage might offer it, versus how FEHBP coordinates with Medicare? What's the difference between the two? Because some folks might decide to drop their FEHBP coverage, get covered by Medicare, and purchase a Medigap, or contrarily, they may just stay with FEHBP because they believe that they're comfortable with the program.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on Medigap policies, but I believe the FEHB provides probably more thorough coverage than what a Medigap does. And again, you're not required to enroll Medicare Part B as a federal retiree. And kind of, you know, it's, you know, what kind of coverage are you looking for? And, you know, we really encourage people to do the research that they need, is necessary to make a proper determination. So, do some research on Medigap. compared to Dave, one thing we do want to remind people is that if you're retired and you have FEHB, there are certain situations which you can suspend your FEHB as an annuitant. And one of them would be to enroll in a Medicare choice plan. But Medigap would not allow you to re-enroll in FEHB if you cancel as an annuitant. So we always give that heads up. You know, when people retire and, you know, and have established their FEHB eligibility, be careful with it. You don't want to do something you're going to regret by accidentally canceling your FEHB and not being able to get back in.
So if I use the FEHBP tool, there's a filter device or some type of way of filtering my choices to sort of include only those plans that provide the incentive, the Medicare Part B incentive, let's say a premium rebate or whatever, and then I can compare the rebates amongst the different choices?
Yeah, you can compare the information regarding the sliders on the plan comparison tool for anyone familiar with it. We have now removed those sliders to make the plan comparison tool compliant with the 5-week requirements of the visually impaired. So we're trying to work on it. Right now the sliders are gone because we cannot make them 5-week compliant, but it's something that we're working on to put those sliders back on. But the information's in there. I believe it's not as convenient to find as it was last year.
Let's talk about another aspect of open season, which isn't necessarily FEHBP per se, but it's about health coverage available during open season, and that's the vision and dental insurance that's available at this time of the year. Can you talk a little bit about the FedVIP, I think you refer to it as?
Yeah, Federal Employees Dental and Vision Insurance Program, which is FedVIP. And we are kind of emphasizing FedVIP a little bit more this year because they're 7-year contract with those plans. And in 2020, OPM completed a competitive application process for the Federal Employees Dental and Vision Insurance Program, aka FedVIP. And we actually renegotiated the contract and we actually brought on some new carriers. So there's some additional considerations for FedVIP this year versus last year. So we got these new plans. They are now coming on board effective January the 1st of 2021. And we are increasing the number of FedVIP carriers. And of course, I can't find the numbers right now. We are increasing the number of dental carriers from 10 to 12. And we're increasing the number of vision carriers from 4 to 5. So it's more choices than there were before. So it made a situation where there wasn't, you know, kind of the FedVIP plan right for you. There's some new choices this year with the new carriers and also some of the FedVIP plans have added new options for 2021. So we are really trying to emphasize this and also some benefit changes within FedVIP too. So, you know, I kind of use myself as an example. I'm not enrolled in FedVIP, but I will take a look this year due to a unforeseen root canal back in February. So, and this kind of brings us to the next part of the discussion. It's that, you know, these are the things you need to think about. You're changing situation for open season. It's that, you know, I'm enrolled in FEHB and have been the same plan and option for several years now. But due to changing circumstances where I was not enrolled in FedVIP before, I'm now given a consideration this year for exactly that. You know, getting a little bit older, a little bit more, you know, dental care than what I needed before. So, you know, that's why we do open season. It's that we understand situations change. Your health needs change. Your dental vision needs change. And also some of the plans change their benefits through their annual negotiation cycle. So, you know, we do put the opportunity for open season out there to take these into consideration, go examine the plans and see if you need to change plans based on a changing situation, or in my case, on a coverage through dental that I didn't have before. So, you know, that's why we do it. But, you know, again, the thing with FedVIP, more choices for 2021 than there were in 2020. So it may entice some new people to enroll. And we should probably encourage the current FedVIP enrollees to go out there and take a look at these new offerings under both dental and vision to see if maybe that's more in line with what their needs and their family's needs are.
What's interesting about open season, whether it be in FedVIP or primary Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, are the variables that one needs to consider or one ought to consider during open season. And it's not only premium. You need to look at the deductible. A deductible could be $250 per person per year, or it could be $500. It's the copayment, whether or not there is a copayment and what the magnitude of that copayment is, whether or not it's a consumer-driven plan, which has a higher deductible, a very high deductible, or not. What is the panel? Is it a PPO, a preferred provider organization, where there are extraordinary discounts if you go to a particular panel of doctors or not? Is your doctor in that panel? These are all issues that you need to sit down and really consider at the kitchen table when you decide whether or not you change and to what plan you change.
Correct. And, you know, I'll use myself as an example again. A couple of years ago, I was looking to make a change to a lower cost option within the plan I enrolled in. And I did exactly that. I knew what the lower premiums were going to be. That's obvious through the premiums. You can calculate those, how much you will pay over your 26 pay periods in my case. What I needed to look at was what's the reduction in benefits. And would the reduction in benefits be less than what I would be saving through my lower premiums? And that's exactly what I did. On the kitchen table, break out, you know, notepad, a pencil and a calculator. I sat there and go, I know what these savings are going to be through the lower premium, but will these savings then be eaten up by the decrease in coverage levels that the cheaper option would provide? And that's exactly what I did. And ultimately, the calculation was that the savings through premiums would more than account for whatever the difference might be. Say, for instance, all my maintenance medication. The premium actually savings were higher than what I would have to pay a little bit in addition for my maintenance medication. So, and I made the change. I haven't looked back on it.
But you could also have two plans with the exact same premium, but one could have a deductible, let's say, of $200 per person, but have maybe a copayment of $20 per office visit. And then you could have another plan, same premium, but a $500 deductible, but a lesser amount, a $5 per visit copayment. And you say, are you going to visit the doctor a lot or not so much this year? Do you anticipate? But the key issues is when you look at the deductible and look at the out-of-pocket limit, because that's also a key issue to consider.
Correct. And, you know, back to my own example was that one of the differences in the plan options was the cheaper option had a higher deductible for hospitalizations. So I kind of weighed the risk. I haven't been admitted to the hospital since I had my tonsils out in 1969. So, you know, do I really want to worry a bunch about what the higher deductible might be for a hospital stay, of which is honestly unlikely I'm going to have, versus what my premium savings are going to be by the lower premium. So you're right, all that fits in there. And then, you know, also the issue of provider networks is that, you know, people like the doctors they've had and they want to make sure they're in the provider network still. And, you know, it is a constant calculation about, you know, what are my anticipated medical expenses? And would the premium savings, again, exceed what my additional medical expenses might be?
It is a complicated calculation that one needs to make at the kitchen table. The last issue I'd like to talk about with you is when we talk about copayments and deductibles, the government offers you, OPM offers you through FEHBP or actually through the open season, an opportunity to have those copayments and the deductible paid for on a pre-tax basis through a flexible spending account. Could you talk about the flexible spending account available through FEHBP?
Yeah, I sure can, because I'm also enrolled in that one. And as you pointed out, it's a flexible spending account. You can use it to pay for your medical, dental, vision expenses that you incur, the eligible expenses. It's one thing that OPM really tries to promote each year because FSA Feds doesn't have the enrollment numbers we like to see. We think it's a good program. Tax savings, we believe a lot of people are leaving money on the table by not enrolling in FSA as in taking the tax advantages. One of the issues is most of our plans have what's called paperless reimbursement, which means you don't have to file a shoebox full of claims at the end of the year. My plan has paperless reimbursement. I go to the doctor, the claim is filed with the insurance company. It's then filed with FSA Feds. and I get a note from my bank that there's been money deposited in my account. It's really that simple. And we really encourage people, because you can have savings of 20%, 30% or more on your various medical expenses, and it can be hundreds of dollars a year. Now, we know people are a little bit leery about the forfeiture aspect, so the minimum participation is $100. For FSA Federal Healthcare, the maximum amount per person is $2,750. I'm also leery about losing money through the forfeiture. So each year I put money in, and I think this year my wife and I have gone through our expenses by August. We burned up all the money we put in. Last year, I think we burned it all up in June. So I'm kind of conservative here. I don't want to give money back to somebody. So I kind of underestimate. But, each year it's burned up, halfway through the year. So when I enroll in FSA Feds in the next week or so, then I'll go back here and I put more money in and save more tax dollars, because, the medical expenses, again, get older, more likely to have medical expenses. And we also want to let everyone know that we do have the carryover, that you can carry over new for 2021 up to $550 of unused FSA Feds money. You can carry it to the next year. And of course, you have to do the reminders that in order to carry that money over, you must re-enroll for the next year. The kind of re-enrollment, FEHB enrollments continue each year unless your plan drops or drops the service area or an enrollment option. FedDip enrollments continue every year. FSA Feds, you must re-enroll each year. That reminder out, and especially when talking about carryover, or to use the carryover, then you must re-enroll for the next year.
Who manages the FSA for OPM?
We have a contractor for that. I believe the company's name is WageWorks.
And it doesn't make a difference which FEHBP plan you participate in, correct?
Not for FSA Feds, it doesn't.
And it's important, I want to just reiterate this, that you can carry over up to $550, you had said, I believe, from one
Correct.
Year to the next, as long as you continue your enrollment in the FSA.
Correct.
And how long into the new year can you file, let's say, for reimbursement from the previous year?
I believe you can file reimbursement. I think it's the medical expenses have to be incurred for health by the end of the year, and I believe all through either March or April.
Through the first quarter, basically.
Yeah, it's into the next year.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you once again, Jay, for coming, for rejoining us for the second year in a row to explain the open season and to give our folks a better understanding of the Federal Employees Health Benefits Programs and the options available within it. And hopefully our listeners will take your advice to heart and act upon it. So I want to thank you again, Jay, for joining us.
My pleasure.
To our listeners, if you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more important, tell your friends to download our podcast and listen in. Be well and safe till next week. I'm gonna